What grounds you in life? What makes you feel whole? What brings you happiness? Whatever it is, how much are you willing to sacrifice to hold on to that thing, that passion? Will you use that passion to drive you forward, or will you abandon it? I know for myself that I couldn't imagine living in a world without creativity, without storytelling, without art. The world would just feel so bland. The life story of today's guest brings to mind not just one, but many lessons. Lessons on finding inspiration, and lessons on adapting these inspirations into your own life, and lessons about holding on to those passions and having that willingness to experiment with different avenues to find whatever path works for you. We have a lot to cover, so let's dive right in. I'm your host, Jacob Johnson. This is the Myers Road Podcast, a narrative journey into the lives that shape art. Today's episode, Pascal Blanchet, right after the break. As always, support for this podcast comes directly from you, the listener. If you enjoy this show and want to help it grow, share it with as many people as you can, and feel free to leave us a review or comment wherever you listen to the podcast. If you would like to take your support a step further, we now have available limited edition art prints on our website, myartisrael.com. These prints are created in collaboration with previous guests and other art friends of mine. They're all limited edition. They're all made in studio by me. So if you want to support me and support the guest, you can head on over to myartisrael.com and collect those prints today. Also, don't forget, if you want to get future bonus episodes and other content, consider signing up and supporting us on the Patreon page at patreon.com/myartisrael. You can start supporting there for only $3 a month, and that $3 goes a long way in making this show possible. Thank you, and back to the episode.
So my name is Pascal Blanchet. I'm a digital artist by night, and I'm more like a art director like by day. I'm from France. I lived in Canada since 2000.
The original idea for this show was that every person's journey and experiences inevitably shape them and their art on a conscious or subconscious level. Pascal is very aware of how his past influences him, and he doesn't shy away from it. Instead, he embraces it. But let us begin this story where all stories begin, at the origin. So where in France are you from?
Born in the south of Paris suburbs, and I lived most of my time like in the south of France, near Marseille, Nice, those areas.
How was it growing up there in France? What was it like for you?
Interesting. Yeah, well, I moved a lot when I was a kid, so I like many different like places I called home. But I love Marseille the most because it's, you know, it's more like a mixed city. It's very Mediterranean. There is also like a huge pool of like artists, and it's very alive. It's more like a kind of a student city.
A young Pascal would spend much of his childhood alone watching TV or drawing. He really loved anime, which was just making its way into France during that time of his life.
Most of the time, like stuck on TVs. It was a new thing. You know, I'm 52 years old, so it's basically you guys call the Gen X generation, and I'm very, like, very, very representation of that. You know, like when they say, like, the Bachka kids, that was me. You know, like, I'm from, like, single mom, and she was working her ass off to just get us, like, food on the table. So it's basically, I was on my own lots with my little sister, and just, you know. So a lot of TV for sure. Also, like in France, it's funny because we all the Wednesday you don't have like school. I thought it was good for the kids, you know, to just take it slow. So we had like a half of the week where we had this like a gap in our like schedules, and parents were working. So, you know, so we are just on our own in the streets and just like going back for food and just opening the brief fridge and, you know, like doing whatever like kids do. So I had that a lot, you know, like I think that it's from there, like I started also like, you know, like to read a lot of comics, to start to draw things, draw comics, draw mangas and be like very like into that. So like I'm the Star Wars generation too. So it's just like a very lot of inspiration of my work that comes from that kind of a like childhood thing, you know, like just like the first animes in France, that was a big thing back then.
Pascal's mother has seemed to have left a very large impact on him. Throughout his whole life, he saw her working her butt off to put food on the table for him and his sister, and it really showed him what it meant to work hard. But as a kid, when he wasn't in school, they had to be left someplace. And a lot of times it was at various childcare places where Pascal found himself spending most of his time alone drawing.
We had those like places, you know, like daycares, you know, the different ages, group of ages, you know, like for teenagers too and stuff where we could go. But I was most of the time, I was not interested in that. So it was more like me drawing in my corner or, you know, like trying to catch up with the school because I was not that good at school.
Did you enjoy school at all or it just wasn't your thing? I know for me, I hated it. I hated almost every single thing about it.
No, I was not interested in school. And also because, like I said before, we moved a lot when I was a kid. I lived in a few places around like Paris first, then Nice, a few different places. So I was always switching like maybe like 3 or 4 years from school to school. Makes me like a kind of a kid who was, you know, growing on my own because it's very hard, you know, to get friends and stuff like that. It's not a sad story. I was also like very happy to be like on myself, you know, like just building up like little walls and, you know, like drawing and stuff like that. But so I was moving a lot. And each time you have to readapt, you know, like sometimes you are good at school, but that school was crap. So, you know, when you come back to like a bigger, like and very high level, like school, you are like just totally lost, you know. So it was just like, and it was very hard for me to catch up, you know, like over that. And I was not really like interested in that. In that, I was good at art, you know, like I was like the best scores at art and sport and, you know, like the easy stuff, but, you know, like math, not so much.
For some, school just clicks for them. I know my wife grew up and was always taking the hardest classes and she just loved things like science, but I was way more into literature, but only if it was something I wanted to read, of course. I personally never felt understood in school. And for me, this idea of studying where you go home and sit for hours reading over and over the same thing, just it didn't work. I did as little as I could just to get by, just to get that diploma so that I could say, hey, I finished high school. Sadly for me, I never had a teacher help me find a way that learning made sense. But I did have a few teachers see potential in me and my art is real and push me to follow my dreams. Pascal did have a teacher go out of her way to understand him.
Funny story, like when I was maybe 15, I had like very, very, very bad grades in math, very the worst, you know. But the math teachers just let me like just go to graduate because it was one of those days where I was just wandering it was in Nice, and I found out that there was like a kind of an exposition about like pinned, you know, insects and butterflies and stuff like that. So it's super interesting. And she found me there. I was like, oh, that's my math teacher. I was like, well, you're into that? I was like, yeah, look at that, super cool and all. And she said, yeah, he's going to be fine. He's interested in other stuff, you know, like he looks like a fine kid to me. So he's just like, he likes other stuff. So I just said, you know, and because she saw me at this place, she was like, well, he's going to be fine. He's just not interested in school. That's it.
Just one moment of understanding from any adult, and especially a teacher, can change your life forever.
No, that was great. They knew it was just not like an interest for me, like in school. So I was lucky, I guess, to have like from time to time, you know, like teachers who were just understanding with that.
Another big supporter of his art was his mother, who found him a night class that he could take to learn art while he was in high school.
And, you know, I passed very, 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 like, very, like, you know, tight. And it just 1 year or two before that, I started already to go, like, at night art schools. I don't know if you get that in, you know, like, it's basically, well, yeah, I could just start painting and stuff like that. I was, like, 16 because I was really interested into that. So my mom just found, like, a class for me, like, a free class for, like, for elders by night, you know. So I was there. And I was just, you know, having a lot of fun there.
So by the skin of his teeth, he graduated high school. But he wasn't done. He knew for certain art was his goal, so he enrolled in art school. Pascal explains to me what the surrounding land of the school was like and where it was located. And at least in my mind, coming from America, where we don't have I don't know, maybe as old and grand areas. It sounded so magical.
And then, you know, like when I was at art school, it was like, so it was in Marseille, so it was in the Carinque, so it's more like it's the White Cliffs of Marseille. That's the where you have like all those very cool, we call that Calanque. It's like a really narrow path, a very narrow path, sea waters, and it's like you have like beaches there and stuff like that. And the school was just nearby that very, very wonderful like place. And, you know, so...
It sounds so beautiful going there, but how was it for you? How was the experience?
It was great. I loved it. I entered the art school in 1989. So it was, so it was very, you know, like it's always summer in Marseille. So I loved it. A lot of students were very artsy, you know, like all the artsies were there, all the crazies were there. Like it was super fun and it was very open. So the first years are basically, they give you like a course to know the basics. And we are like maybe 500 students. And second year, they cut half of it. Those who survive the first, you know, like we have the first graduation can continue and move on. And the other ones, first year had to regraduate. So redo the year twice, the second one, because I was very young, but maybe I was one year earlier. So they thought that I needed a little more time. So, and I was maybe like too lazy going to the beach. Yeah.
At this school, they taught you all sorts of art disciplines. Pascal dabbled in a little bit of everything, painting, illustration, photography, and then he discovered digital art.
I started to do also video editing and more like technology. So I started to work with like digital tools too. Loved it. And I had my first computer was like an Amiga Commodore when I was, you know, like maybe like 18. I just had enough money to just buy one. So, yeah.
And do you remember how much that first computer was that you bought?
I think it was like 2K, yeah, something like that. Yeah, 2K. And you had like a very small RAM extension, like maybe just to double the RAM of your Commodore. It was like 512 bits, you know? And it was like, and the card was that big, you know, like big card. You have to just like put it into your computer with a hammer almost. And, you know, and it was like, so I just bought that and I had a TV, very crappy TV to just connect my Commodore to that. And I had like a DirectX Paint. And it was just magic for me because DirectX Paint was like, you could do like anything with that. You could do animation, you could do, very, very limited, you know, like in resolution for sure. But it was like already for me, I saw the potential of digital art because it was, and you could do like your little animations and your paintings in digital and stuff like that. So it was like super fun.
After trying all the different styles, what was it about digital art that made you feel like, or what was it about digital art that really stuck with you, that made you want to put your efforts into that?
I'm okay, drawer, sculptor and stuff like that. I can manage, but what I like with digital is like you could just redo and do. So there is less stress on the final output. Also, like when I was in art, always very frustrating to fight against, you know, the material. Some people like it. I'm not a manual guy, you know, just don't put a hammer in my hands, you know. So it's just, to me, it was more like a natural way for me to just go to digital because I have like way more control over like what I could do.
Physical mediums are always wonderful, but having that ability to instantly erase and try something new and even restore what was recently deleted while creating digitally is a very useful tool. Not only did digital art allow Pascal to retry without the loss of materials, but he was also able to find workarounds when it came to creating his desired end result.
Like I said, I was already reading comics. I was reading, like bande dessinée and all the graphic novellas and stuff like that. So it's just like, to me, I was like, I never thought I was good enough like artist to draw those things I liked. So I was trying to find workarounds already.
But this idea of being able to quickly redo things to find a better outcome and discovering new shortcuts to the same result is not exclusive to digital art. It was something he learned in class.
One of my teachers at art school, just gave me like, I have two teachers who gave me like very valuable lessons I still use.
All right. So tell me lesson one.
One, retakes. So it's not, to not get attached to what you're doing as an artist. It's basically, he gave us like a kind of a, the task to do like a fake cover for like a magazine. So I took the whole day to do like a very nice, you know, like a cover art, and it's not okay, but it was fine. And just we had to put it like on the table with everyone so we can review it, talk about it, stuff like that. So it's like really interesting. But then he just like took the whole, all our work and put that, them in the bin. I said, tomorrow you're all start and you do it by half the time. All right. So you're like, fuck, it was good. Yeah. So the morning after, you start over half the time, you do it, and you know what's going to do it. You know, you're like, well, I'm doing it, but don't fucking do it. Yeah. He just sticks it in the bin and it's like, now you have like 1 hour. And then you have like half an hour. And, you know, and we are starting to get more. And he said, like, don't try to do something else. Do the same thing you were doing, but do it better. Do it better, faster, better, faster, better. And it was like, in the end, he was not putting it in the bin. He left, he kept it for himself. And in the end, he showed us the progression of our work and how effective we became. So it was super interesting because you are like, well, I took a lot of time there. You know, like, of course, you can see there is more stuff there, but the last ones are way more interesting because I iterated. And I tried to get to the point, you know, like, and I didn't get attached because I knew he was going to put it in the bin. So yeah, but it was very interesting because that process just, you know, like become like, you know, kind of like, it triggers me like, you know, like, oh, that's creation. That's, you know, it's don't try to do the first thing and do the perfect thing. Just try to get the idea. That's, you know, that's very important for me. So that was the first lesson.
I can't tell you how happy I was to hear these lessons from Pascal. It felt almost like I was meant to hear it, as they felt so relevant to how I feel. Like writing the script now, I have to try and not get too attached. I write some words and move on and maybe go back and change it all completely while recording. It doesn't matter what I get rid of, what I change. What matters is that in the end, what is recorded, what comes out, what's released to the public is what it needed to be. Listen up, everyone. It's time for Pascal to tell us lesson number two.
And the second one was like very boring sessions with an art teacher about like art history. And you know, when you're young, you know, like art history can be super boring. You know, like you learn about all those big artists you never heard about, your names, blah blah. I saw those, I didn't know this one, blah blah blah. But he was doing something interesting in the end. He was like giving us like a questionnaire. And it was just, we had like, you know, like to name who did the art on the projection. So it was like, well, obviously this one is a Picasso. You're like, yeah, that's a Picasso. And that's a Picabia. That's a Picabia. And that's, and it was like, no, that's not him. That's Picabia doing a Picasso. And it was always, there's always a trick like that. And so I started to listen a little more to what he was saying in these courses. And basically, he was always starting from like a modern artist and he was going down. He was going like, oh, this modern artist, he was very fan of that one and that one. Those guys were like contemporary, blah, blah, blah. But their like influence comes from those guys and from those guys. And you go back to the down road, you know, very far. So all of a sudden, like all, you know, like art history became super interesting because you see that there is an interconnection to everything. And, you know, like you can't be an artist and not knowing what's been before where art goes and, you know, all the influences, all that, everything is connected. So it just like opens your eye when you're going like into like a museum, stuff like that. It's super interesting.
That lesson right there is exactly what this podcast is about. It's about digging into these artists' past and discovering their influences so we can better understand how their work has evolved. I think it's very beneficial for young artists to hear about these influences because it allows them to know it's okay to have influences and to be inspired and to take little bits and pieces from it. Don't shy away from that. Use it as fuel to make your own works. That's what Pascal did with his love for comics and his love for anime.
And that's something that was very liberating as a young artist. because you're not afraid to just like go like, oh, well, you know what? I have to dig in into my influences. And it took me years, even beyond the art school, you know, like I still do that. I still try to question, you know, like what's important for me, you know, like what makes me like, you know, wake up in the morning and just want me to draw, you know? So, and I was always like super happy when I recognize, when I discovered like a new artist, when I discovered like a new movement, you know, stuff I didn't know. It's super interesting. And it's just, I take that in, you know?
And after taking in all these influences and altering them along the way, he has landed on a style that is all of his own and feels like a living, breathing world.
It feels like it's more like this inside universe I have. It's like that it needs to get out, basically. And it needs to exist. So more like I become more like kind of the canal through which the all those imageries are coming out.
He needed this world of art, not just because he enjoyed it, but because it's what was always there for him throughout his entire life.
It's like it's something that just I could keep for my own, I think. Like it was my personal anchor, you know, like the thing where I can come back to anywhere I am, like, you know, like I had like a pen and something to draw, and I can just, you know, it's like escapism is also like something like that, you know. I was not miserable, you know, like it was a fine life, you know, like, but it's like I felt always like I needed something extra, you know, like, you know, like playing with the kids and all that. I was doing that, of course, I have like very good friends and stuff like that, but on the side, I think it's like it was very important to me to get that little word. I was just like, you know, I can always come back to good days, bad days, you know, like it's something that I really liked. So, yeah.
He has now made it to his final year of art school and was one of the few people left in the class, actually. But graduation would not go as planned.
The more you graduate, the less there are people. We ended it like last year, we were left, final year, we were just 15 something. And but you become more and more like an artist. And that's where I quit because I didn't want to be an artist. After that, you know, like all that I realized that was not like the way I wanted to you know, to do my life, because I wanted to be an artist. I still, you know, like try to reach that goal, but I wanted a life too, you know, like I wanted to get a job.
And so could you tell me, like, when you say you wanted to be an artist, but not that kind of artist, what kind of artist are you referring to? What kind of artist do you mean by that?
It's the gallery kind of artist. And I thought I was too young for that at that stage in my life. It was not like a viable option for me. I didn't saw myself just trying to live from my paintings, you know, that was way too early. I knew that, you know, I was in my guts. I was like, yeah, that's not going to just put, you know, like your food on the table, you know? So, and I had that always, like I said, like because my mom was a very hard worker. I had that kind of that in the back of my mind, you know, like you need to get money to just get a life. So you won't go nowhere.
Pascal had felt this way because of what he saw growing up. His mom constantly working her butt off to provide for them. He knew he was going to have to work hard, and he was already getting his foot into the door to work on projects that interested him. During the summer leading up to that final year, he had been working a job at a video game magazine, getting that foot in the door.
I started to do like a few jobs here and there in the same time as I was in art school, because we have like a lot of time, and I tried to become more like a cover artist, you know, like an illustrator, stuff like that, trying to, you know, find my way like in there. And I had like a few chances where I could just start to work for a magazine in Paris. So it was a bit difficult because I was living in Marseille. But because I passed a whole summer working with like that video game magazine, actually, the name was Tilt, and I was more like doing little like caricatures there, like for the magazine, stuff like that. So I had a few bucks for that, and then I said like, yeah, I can just I was lucky also because one guy was writing a chronicle about art in that magazine, about like all the readers from that video game magazine were just sending, you know, like fan works of the games from back then. And the guy was just, you know, like giving some advices and stuff like that. And because I was from art school, I said, yeah, I can just do that. I can just, you know, like continue what the guy started. So I became more like a permanent at that a video game magazine, and started to do like chronicles while I was continuing to do my art on the side.
What was your reason for going into video games, though? Did you think, okay, this is going to be a much more stable career path within what I want to make? Was that your thought process, or what were you thinking?
Actually, I didn't think in a way that is it like possible for video games to sustain my life and stuff. I didn't think about that. It was fun to do, and I found that, you know, it was the first indie. I was there, and I knew I could just, you know, do the job. So I applied, and they got me because I was very focused on what I wanted to do. But it was more like a dream job. You know, I like doing art, and I was going to be paid for that. So to me, I was not looking further than that. You know, like, is it going to work or not?
During this time, Paris was going through a boom in the video game development space. Working for various independent studios, Pascal had to jump around from job to job, but it was always easy to find a new one.
I started working for video games in 1994. And for the first like 4 years, I just changed like many jobs because, you know, like, it was indie. So you are working your ass off, and suddenly you had like the boss opening the door and was like, well, lads, tomorrow you're out. I have no money anymore. Yeah. <You're> like, all right. And, you know, but because I was starting to do like, I have like many friends in the area, and so it was always easy to just jump on the next one. You know, there was more and more hiring at this period because it was booming. So it was in Paris, and it was not easy, but, you know, each time I found something, I'd never like double check or whatever. I was like, yep, I take it. You know, like, whatever it is, I'm jumping on that boat, you know, like, I figure it out later.
For about 4 years, it went on like this. He was go from all these different studios back and forth trying to find jobs, and in between there doing some contests with his art to win some money. But then finally the time came to release his very first game.
I had my first game coming out when I worked for Xilam Company in Paris. The place was amazing. And I worked there for 2 years doing cinematics. I was doing it all, basically. So it was super a great learning experience for me because I was doing it. Was, you know, one of those games, the name of the game was Stupid Invaders. If you check that, it was from a little French series, animation series. Very goofy, a bit trash.
Hey, well, even if he didn't think it was the best game in the world, he did release a game. So props to that. His personal life was moving forward. Him and his girlfriend got married and decided to take a honeymoon to what I would say is not a normal honeymoon destination.
I'd already, like, for a few years, like, found my girl, and we married in France. And then we decided for our honeymoon to go to Canada, all over the place. Was like, let's go to Canada. Why not? we had like a little idea in the back of our head because we wanted to maybe like change life a bit and, you know, like get away from Paris and all that. So we wanted to give it a try, and we loved what we saw there. So we were like, coming back, we started to do the paperwork to just go and settle in Canada.
They enjoyed many aspects of Canada, which made it feel like a perfect match. They did try to go back to Paris once, but the gaming industry was not good at the time. So then they tried out the UK as well, so they could kind of be closer to Paris, because at the time the UK was still in the European Union. But that didn't last very long. They absolutely did not enjoy it. So they ended up back in Montreal, and it just felt like home. While Pascal had dropped out of art school, it didn't mean he gave up on art. With having a secure day job, he was still producing works on his own, But for a long time, digital art was not the sort of art that was getting shown in galleries. Well, along came the internet, and things started to change. The ways we share and enjoy art changed. There became blogs and all these different social medias online, like Instagram, where people could share what they were making. And so at what point did your personal artwork start to kind of take off?
It started to grow after, like, when I arrived in Canada. I started social media started slowly early in the 2000s. So we started to have more and more like forums for artists where we can just start to talk a bit. And I have that feel of community that was not there at all before that. So we started to talk to each other, to meet each other, and just start to just motivate each other. I started to do like more digital art at that time.
Being able to connect with like-minded people across the web can really help you and give you motivation. And having these other people interested in his works and interested in their works gave him a lot of fuel and motivation to keep going and releasing more and more digital works.
I started to be published more like in digital magazines, you know, like having my work on the cover, doing a little article, you know, like how to do my stuff or how to do things and et cetera. And then, you know, like one thing after another, I started to get contacted by, you know, like Wizard of the Coast or like for like cover art or stuff like that. And, you know.
And it became a pretty fun, successful side hustle. Was it hard at all for you to manage that? Like manage the full-time, you know, video game studio job and doing all this art and the commissions on the side?
No, I think it's more like a kind of a way of life, you know, like it's like if I don't do art for myself, it's just like I always say, it's like it's my sanity, you know. I think it would be harder for me to just, you know, like do my daily job, which I love. It's totally something different. But not doing art will be like frustrating after a while, because when you work for the industry, basically it's like you're more, you're working on a product, you know. So it has its challenges, creative challenges and stuff like that. But when you're at home, you're doing your art, you're doing your fun, you know, you're doing you, you know. So again, that little bubble when I was a kid, I still need that, you know, as a dailies.
With that need to create his own world, art has remained his anchor and keeps him motivated. Like everyone else, he has times where he has creative blocks and nothing can come out of his brain, and he has to reignite these creative juices.
It doesn't always like come out like that easy. Sometimes, you know, I'm stuck, you know, I write nothing, no juices. So I know that those times I try to, you know, I read. It's just that my brain needs to just relax a bit. So I read, I go walk, I do that sort of things after, you know, I can be like not working on my own personal stuff for a few weeks, you know, and not, you know, like freak about it. And, you know, like, and when it comes back, it's just the fire comes back, you know, so you're like, yeah, I got it.
Me and him really connected over this topic because, you know, society and the internet really makes you feel as if you always have to be busy and hustling and constantly getting stuff done, because if you're not doing enough, somebody else is, and you're a loser and all these crazy ideas. Me and him both grew up with parents that worked their butts off, and seeing that really put this drive in us to feel like we also had to constantly be working hard every single moment of the day. Art, however, doesn't work that way. Art comes when it wants to. It's not something you can force out. And being an artist is more than the time spent at the canvas or the desk.
Even when I was alongside of all what we said, like since I'm in Canada, I started to also like give courses, you know, for schools from to time, you know, like sometimes it's just like a few hours. Sometimes it's just, you know, an intervention where I talk about my work or where I come. And always the kids, they always come back with the same questions, you know, like the process, you know, like where do you find the inspiration? What happens when you don't find the inspiration, you know, and why is it okay if it looks like the other guy, you know, like all what you are talking, you know, like the process, even for you as a podcaster, it's creative process is the same, whatever you do, like music, you know, like writing, you know, to a point where the art to me, I get more like used to listen to what I want to do and stuff like that, and just keep it. And I try to refrain myself to just go straight I let it sleep there. I do a walk, I just like a few days, and when it comes out, it just comes out like without, you know, like I'm just almost like on the second seat.
Pascal doesn't force the art. He lets the art flow out of him when it's ready, and he creates when the inspiration strikes. Everyone, including myself, gets so hung up on overthinking the process and trying to never have a creative block. But the real solution is to not let it get to you. Go enjoy life. Breathe in nature. Read a book. Watch a movie. And you just might find that inspiration in the most mundane, random incident.
I learned also, like, it's super important when you want to be an artist. You don't need to be an artist all day long. 100% of the time, like, and all week. You need to have like a side job, whatever it is. You need to have like a side thing, because it's like I always see that it's a spring, like it's like it's muscle, like something you need to stretch it out. And you know, when it's like super stretched, you don't have the juice anymore, and you just need to contract. And it's just so it's just the breathing, like of the creation is, if you know that for the next week or next month you're just going to do just that. Guaranteed, the first 3 days, nothing comes out. And you're going to just be lazy, binge watching, whatever. No, you can't get it. You can't get it. And you're going to do like half your time is going to be about that. and then the last week, last day, you're going to rush it out. So when you just want to be like a full-time creative, I said, it's just like you need something else in your life, you know, and it can be like family too, you know, like you take your time with your kids, you just do your usual daily stuff and all. And to me, it's just when it's around nine and a half, like a night, that's when sometimes they're like, do I do something tonight? Yes. Do I want to do? Do I need it? If I'm like, yeah, you know, there is that thing I want to do. And, you know, okay, cool. I'm going to walk till like midnight-ish, and then that's it. And if...
When you started getting into selling your works, your digital works as NFTs, what was that like?
That was very special. If you talk about like the NFT part, is like that's a huge talk there. But to me, till the NFTs, it's just selling art was just getting a few, you know, $100 from here and there. You know, like it's always was. It's not paying, you know, like if you see the number of hours you do for something versus the pay, yeah, not much. I had a few very good gigs, you know, like I worked for Autodesk and they gave me like a lot of cash, you know, like was like once in a time, you know, like a thing happening, like I get like, I think it was like $2,000 for like two pictures. I was like, what the hell? I'm rich, You know, I can make a living, because you always have in the back of your mind, like one day I'm going to be like doing enough money with that, so I can just, you know, like feed my family and just do that, you know, the dream, you know. But it's so NFT, when NFT arrived, I just couldn't believe it. You know, I was like, wait a minute, you're telling you that now because of, you know, like blockchain and all that, you know, like a digital has its own, like its own proprietary thing, like this little stamp that this one is original, and so it has a value now, like any kind of art in a gallery. Is it, yeah. Where is the trick?
Being able to sell your digital artworks as an original, one of a kind, seemed really too good to be true. So he had to make sure he did his research properly before he started diving in.
Looked a lot into that before trying it and jumping. And just, yeah, NFTs have this kind of a, you know, like backlash, you know, like NFT is evil, blah blah blah. But what I see is just like it's just like that stamp of approval, like from a specialist that just see a picture and say, yes, that's a Picasso, yes, that's a thing. The value of your picture is the little paper that says, yes, this thing is unique and has that kind of value. So it's just, to me, it's the digital version of that. So, you know, so yeah, of course you can have like griefers, you can have like the art can just be worth nothing in years, or yes, but that's the market art, and that market art market is kind of its own beast. It's crazy, you know, like there is no way like a little stain on the wall, on the paper can be worth like $3 million, but here we are, you know. But it's, you know, it's, that's it. So it's exactly the same thing for digital digital art, because behind that it's the artist. That what is it worth, you know, like, and that it has value.
But doing art prints and NFTs, how does it feel for you when people are so willing to pay for your artwork?
I just can't wrap my head with that around that one. I don't know if it has it's that value to me is does it have value for them? Because, you know, like people who just are into that kind of Ephraim thing and all, that's the money is different. The money is, it's not about the money, it's about getting something that someone else wants. So I don't know why I stand there. I have no real idea. It's like, yes, it's a lot of money, but is it why? I'm still wondering sometimes why? Why? You know, it's like, okay, sure, but you sure? Because that's a lot of money. I'll take it if you say you take it. But that's, you know, like, it's like, it's kind of almost like it's a gamble, you know, like over time on an artist. And that I understand. It's how it works, you know. When you have those, again, like in the 90s, you know, like the artwork used to be, you know, poor, and then they find someone, they find them and pay them an amazing fee for like one little painting, and they can live on that for 1 year and continue to be artists. So they have like a sponsor, basically. So I see more of those people, more like not putting value on my work, more like putting value on a digital print, but putting value on me as an artist, and say that I give you that money so you can continue to do what you like to do. And I think that's great, you know. And I still have a lot of contacts with those guys who just put money in my work. And sometimes I say, hey, I give them like little things. I give them like little hints of things to come, and just say like, yeah, I'm continuing to work hard. Don't worry. I'll get somewhere someday, you know, like you put your you know, like your trust and your money into my work. I will make it worth it, you know, like I feel a bit like that. Yeah.
The way he describes it is so beautiful. I never thought of it that way, but he's right. People like to buy art for it to be an investment. And he wants to do the collectors right. He wants to make sure he is putting their money into good use by making the best works he can and building his career for not just himself, but for all of those who believe in him and have supported him along his way. Pascal says you have to have something to do outside of your normal art practice. For him, it has always been his video game work, spending time with family. Who knows? Maybe one of these days, NFTs and prints will make him a full-time artist. Or maybe he's just content with letting his work be out there making people happy and seeing the joy that it brings to others. And so tell me, any big plans moving forward?
Maybe animation too, or, you know, like, I have like, for now, it's continuing what I like to do. I'm working on a new game now and stuff like that. But maybe later on, like, I don't know, like being on my own and doing my own franchise and stuff like that. I would love that too. Just to expand what I like to do. When I get to a point where like my kids are out, I can maybe like take a little more risks, you know, like having a different like way of life, so I can just continue to explore myself as an artist for sure. Yeah, I won't do that because I think I'm just scratching the surface still. After all these years, I think it's just like I always feel like I just like just never like let go like my artist side yet. Because I think there is no turning back after that. That's my worry. So I always try to be like, yeah, you know, I do illustrations, stuff like that, but there is more that I want to do. And maybe I like come back to, you know, like painting, sculpting, using that also with like a digital medium, just finding my own ways and going a little more like insane for sure. But I think I still have that, but I keep that like on the side, you know, like it's just like, oh, it's little dessert, like when basically my family is more like independent, and I can just like take more risks. So yeah, I think it's still ahead for me. I'm still ahead. I'm still young.
Following his passion and embracing his influences has made him the artist he is today. Not being concerned with what the traditional process is and following his own path allowed him to make what works for him. We're not all the same. You, the listener, your process, your influences, the way you look at life is all different from mine and Pascal's. You have your own path you need to follow, and you need to embrace it. And it's once we embrace our own unique ways that we truly discover who we are. Thank you for listening to yet another episode of the Myers Road Podcast. As you all know, I couldn't do this show without you. This episode was, you know, surprisingly very difficult for me to get created. I was dealing with my own creative block trying to get started. As I got through the episode and I got to the sections where we talk about creative blocks, it really helped me push through and finish the episode. So even though I create these episodes to hopefully reach people that need to hear these lessons, a lot of the times I need to hear them just as much as anybody else. I hope that this show can inspire all of you. If this show has inspired you, please consider sharing it with everyone you know so we can grow even bigger and help even more people. And show your support even further if you would like by going and purchasing prints on the Myers Row website. I work really hard on these prints. I want them to be unique. I want them to be quality, and I want them to be a lovely piece of art for you all to hang on your wall. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you in the next episode.